Fish and Frank and Robert and RJ, and we are back for another week. You're back. We're both here. We're both together. See, I can see you right across the table. No, don't be holding that while I'm sitting here. All right. Now, anyway, we can scratch and we can itch ourselves into this next hour, and it's Fish and Frank's Radio Fishing, and morning, afternoon, evening, whatever time it is that you're listening to this. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm just peachy. RJ, you alive and well today?
I am here and happy. Like I was saying, I'm on the right side of the turf today, and that makes me feel good.
Green side up.
That's
I remember
right.
that joke. All right. Back into the wide world. Robert, how old are you? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, little Robert. Happy birthday to you. How old are you now?
46.
Wow. Oh, what a puppy.
Yeah.
Little young guy.
Yeah, he's got a ways to go, right? Yeah. Coming up in the ranks.
Yeah,
yeah.
So.
That's all right.
Now, you went out for your birthday. You went fishing.
Yeah, I did tarpon fishing, and of course the weather was...
Okay, well, before you go into that, let's go way, way back into time. And was it your birthday that you were supposed to play a baseball game and ended up getting upset and going fishing? Because you didn't want to play baseball?
Yeah, but I don't remember if it was my birthday or not.
Okay, because I remember the story. Robert's fishing career got started because... RJ was just talking about he's a huge baseball fanatic, and here I'm in the middle. Robert's on one side over here, who literally started fishing, and he was supposed to be playing baseball. It ended up I don't remember the story.
Well, we were supposed to be our first little baseball game or t-ball. I don't remember. I was young, and my parents were going to go fishing with my brother and sister for a little bit before the game started, and I threw a temper tantrum because I wanted to go fishing too, and that pretty much ended the baseball thing. So, I got my way and went fishing.
And you never looked back.
Not even close.
And, you know, it was just before the show started, they were talking about RJ's huge baseball guy. He wanted to go on with a career in baseball. And got me thinking about Robert and his story about that, you know, got so upset because I don't want to play baseball. I want to go fishing.
Yeah.
And yesterday's your birthday, and historically, that's the day you always go fishing. Next year, I'm going to Vegas, calling Vegas, and I'm putting in a bet that on May 16th, it is going to be windy and rain in Charlotte County. It's really good bet. When's the last time? I mean, I'm going to put one bet in on windy and really double down on it, and then put a smaller bet in on rainy because that one's kind of a 50-50.
Right.
When's the last birthday you went out that it wasn't windy or rainy?
Long enough where I can't remember.
I mean, seriously.
Literally probably several years.
I've got to call up Ruskin, the National Weather Service, and give them that and let them know that this date every year is going to be windy.
Oh, it is.
Or they rainy, could,
they
or
could,
both.
They could take the day off from predicting, and they got it. They got it made.
And it's been at least 10 years that May 16th is just a bad day.
So he's a hurricane attractant.
Yes.
Something, yeah.
So... Anyway,
it's
so
always
you,
been my little black cloud on that day, literally.
Maybe you scare the fishing gods.
I don't know.
Okay, Poseidon is worried. So,
well, yeah. I would guess that it's the day that they give the fish the day off, and that's how Poseidon is doing it. He's making the weather really bad so Robert can't get out there and give the fish a day off.
Right. So. You can give him a day off any other day, and it's just like the one day I just want to go out and enjoy myself, and I get flicked fairly regularly, so that's all right. You know,
all right. Okay. So anyway, yesterday you went fishing. What You went with Captain Carl, KB Backcountry Charters.
Yep.
And what happened?
Let's see. It was white capping the entire time. We hid from the rain for an hour and a half.
You were up under a bridge for an hour and a half, huh?
Yep. And the tarpon were cooperating. There was a lot of them out there, and there was even people hooking up pretty regularly. Finally, once the wind or the rain subsided a little bit, we went out there, and I stuck my first fish at about 11, 11:30, something like that. Fought it for a half hour, and I don't know what happened. I don't know if I hit some submerged line down there or whatever, but it broke me off, and it was a good fish. It was, I mean, it never jumped once again. No jumping tarpon. Never jumped. It came up and rolled twice. In the first roll, if I had to guess from what I could see, it was 140, 160 pounder.
All right. Here's one for you. I had a guy and his kids come in today, and they were out with one of the captains, and they hooked a tarpon. It took them 45 minutes to land it, and he wanted a rod with more control because it was just too long to fight a fish. And I said, well, A, did it jump? No, it didn't jump. I said, and you were able to land it in 45 minutes? I said, I don't think it was the rod or the reel. I said, I believe it's just kind of you making stuff up, to be quite honest. I mean, a tarpon that doesn't jump over 80 pounds and you expect that you're going to land it in 10 minutes
right.
or 15 minutes? He said, well, I figured 25 minutes was all you needed to land a tarpon. I'm like, well, so much for figuring.
Right. I consider myself a little better than average when it comes to fighting tarpon. And last week, that one whooped me. And then yesterday, that first fish was doing a pretty good job. And then the second fish that I hooked was a smaller fish. I mean, I don't know, buck 20, buck 30. It still took me 50 minutes to get that fish in.
Yeah, once they don't jump.
And that fish
just,
never jumped either.
Yep.
That second fish never jumped either.
And that was the thing about his, it didn't jump. I don't know if there's a trend for fish staying down or if it's something new that's going to go on.
The jacks are conspiring with them.
The jacks are conspiring with them.
Yeah, well, the jacks have been giving lessons. That's what I heard.
Don't jump.
Yeah.
Just wear them out.
Yeah,
just don't jump. You'll
just,
be all right.
You'll
just
be called a trash fish in no time.
Yeah. It just takes too much energy to get that 180 pounds out of the water 6 feet up into the air, so don't do it.
Yeah.
Now, in the jacks' case, if the tarpon would teach them to jump, that would take all the pressure off the tarpon because jacks would be the number one game fish ever.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
So getting back, you went out fishing and you're in the pass. How were you fishing it? What were you rigged up?
Basically, we were using spinning tackle and, I believe 65-pound braided. And doing that same technique that we were doing that we're both kind of new to, basically, where you're casting up current with a pinch on weight right above your hook and letting that crab sink down as naturally as possible and trying to get it down into the depths to where those tarpon are actually suspended.
Well,
at.
The only thing that's new to me about that is using the pinch on weight instead of the rubber core sinker. 25, 30 years ago, when we were out there, that's how I was doing it. The drop back method and all that,
yeah.
That took me a while to figure out back in the late 90s when I was out there a lot doing charters, because that was the way you could hook up. That was back at the height of the jigging.
Right.
And everybody had to jig. But the guys who were catching the most fish were freelining back off the back of the boat or with those light weights. And it was casting out the side of the boat and letting it drift around back behind the boat, doing that drift, and then freelining the crabs up into the current. At that point, there were so many boats there, it was almost impossible. But if you got out there in the evening when the jig fishermen had left and before the bait guys got out, we did a lot of free lining for those tarpon out there back then. But you had such small opportunities to do it because there was so many more boats.
Right.
I mean, 100 boats was not many in the past back then.
Right, that was a normal day.
And now 35, 40 boats is kind of the average. It's less than half of what used to be there.
Right. And I get that, and I've seen it done that way, but almost always on, you know, the hill tides when the crabs are actually flowing through the pass. I've seen that done a lot of times, but this technique...
Well, we didn't always use the crabs. We used thread fins to do it. We used white bait, a bunch of other types of whatever we could find fish from all that. The ones to avoid were ladyfish and mullet because for some reason or other, the sharks go after them a bit more than the other ones.
Right.
If you wanted to entice more of a shark bite or tarpon, you threw a ladyfish on and just drifted free line through the pass. And that was a really good way of finding out if there were sharks there. For some reason or other, they just knocked the heck out of them. Same thing with a live mullet. The tarpon or the sharks would both go at them. But if you use like a thread fin or a greenback, even a bigger one, and you didn't get as much shark activity on it.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. I mean, there's so much other stuff around for them to want to target, but hey, that's a little bit better of a morsel to hammer.
Well, it could be that. It could be that both the ladyfish and the mullet, I would say usually one a little deeper. When you put a thread fin on, it's always trying to swim towards the surface.
Right.
And it's not going to go down as deep. A ladyfish and a mullet, when it gets hooked, a lot of times you throw them out and they're actually go much deeper. They don't try and stay up in the current. They'll go down more towards the bottom. They'll be in that from middle lower where the thread fins and stuff will be from middle higher. And okay. I think those sharks kind of waiting down below and seeing the stuff in distress coming up to get it.
I can see that.
Where I don't think the sharks are really kind of hanging out at the surface, you know, in that upper water column looking for the food. I know they're there, but I think the ones that are really actively hunting are deep coming up for it.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I've seen it out there personally when they're eating fish, so... You know, because a lot of times when they sound down like that, I've had quite a few fish eaten over the years that are down deep.
It seems like the sharks that are up closer to the surface, they're more curious, but it's like the tarpon. They're really not the ones eating.
Right.
They're the ones doing something. We don't know what it is exactly that they're up there doing, but the closer they are to the surface, the less likely they are to bite something. But the further down they get, the more likely they are to bite.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, I'm not sure. This is just, you know.
No, and I mean, the only time I've ever seen them really on the surface with the shark wise is when they come up and grab a tarpon that is literally hooked, being fought, and almost exhausted. And that fish has already sounded and come back up, so I think they followed it from the bottom and came up. Plus, it's such a large animal in distress. It's putting out a large electrical field that's attracting them to know that there's something going on. So that's
electrical field.
Well, I mean, it's just like when you're calm,
right?
Your heart's not doing a whole lot, but when you get excited or you run 50 feet,
I run 50 feet, I'm gonna die.
But that's what I mean. Your heart rate.
There won't be any electrical fields if I run 50 feet.
Well, there will be when they're hitting you with the jumper cables to bring you back.
Yeah.
But your heart rate's going faster, so you're putting off...
More sound, more just
everything.
All distress signals.
And let me interject as what I've seen as a diver with sharks and tarpon attacking, schools of bait fish. The sharks don't go completely to the bottom. They stay off the bottom for a ways. But when they attack, they go almost straight up into the bait ball. And the tarpon hit it from the side. You know, they're straight runners towards the side. So I can see the sharks looking up, you know, for activity up and above them because they're ambush at that point. And so they're ambushing from the bottom going up. And so that's probably what you see, that the fish sounds, gets back up into the middle area, and now he's attractive to the sharks.
Yes.
And I think when the tarpon come up and down, I've seen it in Boca Grande Pass, they go up to the top and they don't stay there very long. They're going up there to fill their swim bladders back with air so they can go back and stay down longer. And they don't stay at the top very long. Yeah. They get back down and they get underneath where the sharks are. So that and somebody told me once, I don't know if this is true, but the tarpon, because of their swim bladder, can stay down longer in that low oxygen level, which is down starting about 40 feet. As you get down below 40 feet, the oxygen levels drop, and the sharks don't like to be in that low oxygen water. So they stay in about that mid-range. They're not running along the bottom, where the tarpon can go down to the bottom and stay there longer because they don't need the oxygen through their gills. They got it in their swim bladder.
And I didn't know the oxygen was lower. I mean, I could see that if it was way down, but I'm not sure there's lower oxygen there. I'm going to have to check on that. I'm gonna call that an absolute maybe.
Yeah, it's same thing for me. That's what I've heard. And they're saying that there's lower oxygen when you get down. And it makes sense. As you get down deeper, the water is more dense, doesn't hold as much oxygen in it.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, it makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, it's definitely something that's in...
Maybe for a pelagic fish.
Well, it raises an interesting question anyway to want to learn a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, because I think about the wrecks. Just let's take the Bay Ronto. Mm-hmm. And that's way more than 40 foot.
Right.
And it's 185 feet of water. And there's tons of fish around that wreck. Sharks, everything else.
Sure. I think it depends on the species, too. I mean, some species can tolerate lower levels of oxygen, depending on how they're raised. But, I mean, it's
well, Goliath grouper, red grouper, snappers.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got a lot of different species, but, I mean, it still raises an interesting question. Can those animals, just like you and I living at sea level, no problem. We go to Denver and try to walk down the street. It's a little more difficult. But if we were to slowly over time acclimate
Was in Denver, chances are I'd be walking real slow anyway.
You know, but taking a while.
Trying to guide myself along. Maybe with a stick. I could walk with a stick there. Okay.
You know, it's just acclimating yourself slowly over time.
And I'd be acclimated.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So, you know, it's just, it raises an interesting thought nonetheless and something to look into regardless. So it's
all
just,
right.
it's a fascinating idea without a doubt.
Yeah. You seldom see the, with a few exceptions, there's some sharks like the great white that go down to fairly deep depths. But when you see the pelagic sharks, you know, and the bull sharks and black tips and stuff, they tend to stay in that middle 40, 50-foot range, and you don't see them much lower than that.
Okay, well, I'm gonna go along with that. I'm going to drop back into the past. Okay. In Boca Grande Pass, there's two styles of fishing now. We used to, for a few years, it was considered the only way you were going to fish in there was with a conventional rod.
Correct.
Deep dropping, jigging, bait, whatever it was. Now, spinning rods are becoming very normal in the past. But the older style stuff, the conventional, which where the line comes straight on, straight off, for deep dropping, is still in effect. So conventionals are still being used there, mostly with, I mean, you're using different line, different everything on that conventionals from what we use in the spinning, correct?
Right. The weird part is I'm seeing them use everything right now. It used to be 100% mono for the guys that knew what they were doing, but now I'm seeing braid and mono depending on which person it is playing with it. It's really weird.
No, it's not, because you get a lot of people who are now just learning the pass.
No. I'm seeing like some of the guys that have been doing this for several years having a hodgepodge of stuff on their boats.
Well, I think after several years of doing this, your brain becomes kind of hodgepodge. Right. Let's go into what you would do, and how do you rig up for a conventional rod? What length, what action, what's a good reel, what's a good line? How do you do the sinker? What do we do?
Are we talking about for a jig or for a live bait?
Bait.
For bait?
Yes.
I'll probably still go with a 7-foot rod. Something with a little bit of tip action to it, maybe a little stiffer than normal.
So more like you'd troll for king mackerel with.
Maybe
like a 30 to 50 pound class.
Yeah, something with a just
it's got a little bit of a light tip. It's not like a 30 to 80 or more right. broomstick.
Right.
But you've got a very heavy butt section, and then as it gets to the tip, you get a little bit of lightness to it, so you can literally see the tip of the rod bounce a little bit if that tarpon grabs it.
Right. You know, and then I'm going to set it up with a egg sinker, basically a sliding egg sinker like you use for grouper fishing. Egg sinker on the main line, swivel, 6 to 10 feet of leader.
All right, so what you're doing is you're putting your line through the egg sinker and then tying a swivel on.
Correct.
So and then tying your leader off of the swivel.
On the main line.
No, wait a minute. You put your line through the egg sinker, tie your line to the swivel, and then tie your leader to a swivel.
Correct. The other side of the swivel.
Not the same side?
Well, you made it the way you just said that made it sound like two swivels.
No.
So, yeah, and 6 to 10 feet of leader, and then a hook, basically, probably.
What size leader?
60 or 80 pound.
Okay.
And I'm going to be using fluorocarbon because the water is very clear right now. You will get more bites, especially with the amount of pressure that's out there. You want every single benefit that you can make to be more appealing to those fish. And then I'm going to use a 6-aught or a 7-aught hook, J-hook or circle hook, doesn't matter to me. I prefer to use a J-hook. You know, there is no law out there that says you have to use circle hooks for tarpon fishing, contrary to what a lot of people are confused by.
All right, now the one thing about this is, what I'm seeing is the Trocar TK3, 6-aught, 7-aught, has become the tarpon hook of tarpon hooks.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can't even get them right now. They're so hard to get.
And
they are literally probably the number one tarpon hook in Florida, hands down.
All right. When I get away from those, I can go into VMC, Owner. Gamagatsu's have a fairly decent hook. I usually do the VMC, then Owner my second choice, and Gamagatsu is a third choice. But the Eagle Claw Trocar hooks are number one.
Yeah.
What about J-hooks? What's the number one J-hook for you tarpon fishing?
I must still stick with the Owner.
Owner?
The Owner needle point. That's going to be my main hook of choice, period.
Okay.
You know, it's just I've caught enough tarpon on them over the last 20 years to say that that just is a consistent hook
now,
for me.
Why the needle point instead of the cutting point?
Because that cutting point is so sharp on the tip that trying to get into that cinder block mouth, sometimes that tip rolls over and you don't get as good of a hook set.
Really?
That's what I found. You know, and I was showing that several years, well, geez, 15 years ago probably.
Okay, because I've always liked the cutting point because it's literally a broadhead arrow.
Right.
And if it touches something, it cuts in.
Right.
But the only thing I found with the cutting point from Owner is you definitely get the hooks up, but you got to keep that hook tight because if the hook goes side to side, it'll literally cut a wider hole.
Yeah, it wallows out a bigger hole. That's why that hook works so well on like some of your harder mouth fish than it does, say, your fish that have that membrane, like, say, a snook. It's got that thin membrane for a mouth. It wallows out that hole really quickly versus a redfish. It's just all lips, you know, and major yeah. skin, you know, so it's not going to cut through as easily.
All right. So anyway, you get out there, and whether you're going to fish with a spinning rod and, say, ounce and a half pinch on weight, casting up into the current, letting it drift back towards the tarpon, or if you're trying to deep drop your rigs and bottom fish with it, the first thing you do is you get into Boca Raton Pass. You're going to figure out which way the current's flowing. So you're going to go up into the current, watch your bottom machine, look for fish, look for groupings of boat. Because if you don't have a $5,000 fish finder, the other guys do. So if you watch them go up to this spot and come back, go up to this spot, wait till he gets about halfway through his drift, then go up where he was when he started his drift and just drift down back through him. I look for the guys with the real expensive big picture displays. They go, okay, that's where he went. All right, I'm going to stay out of his way, far, well far away. but get up on the high side of him, let him start his thing, and then I'll kind of work my way down there, just kind of doing a loop-de-loop. I mean, I'm not going to spend $5,000 on a bottom machine, but I'm glad he did. Yeah. Now, I go up there, you drive up into the current, your nose is going up into the current. Now, when you get to where you want to stop and fish, let the front of the boat swing around so that the nose of the boat is trailing in the current. And you do this by putting your boat in reverse, kind of turning one way or the other. Then as the nose swings around to follow the back of the boat is towards the current. And now you go into reverse. And the guy asked me, well, how do you do that so you can make it right? Well, it's very simple. You get your motor in reverse, and you drop a line in the water. If the line goes towards the front of the boat immediately, when you drop it in the water, if the line starts going to the front of the boat, you are way too heavy in reverse. So you back off the throttle a little bit, bring your line up, drop it again. Now, if the line goes immediately towards the back of the boat, you're not in reverse enough. You're drifting forward too much. If you're in reverse too much, you'll be going back against the current too much. What you want to be able to do is drop your line down and have it stay for 20, 30 seconds without moving forward or back. That's the perfect speed. Being able to keep that line straight up and down in the water with a sinker on it, that's critical. Now, 4 to 6 ounces of lead, if you're running the motor correctly, you should be able to stay 1 or 2 minutes with your line dead vertical. If you're freelining a crab or bait fish, you're casting up into the current, trying to figure out your speed with the motor, casting it up and letting it drift alongside the boat out towards the bow. And what you're doing there is by casting up into the current, into the tide, as it drifts back, it's slowly sinking. So you're gaining depth while it's drifting through the water. It's going from the surface down, down, down. Done correctly, that crab, by the time it hits the end of the line, is going to be down 20 to 30 feet. If you're doing it incorrectly, it goes at the surface, goes a couple feet underwater, and pops back up out the back. That means you're running too much in reverse, you're pulling the boat back too fast. That bait's got to get down in the water. Like we say, the deeper you are, the more likely you'll get a hit. But it's that natural presentation of that bait slowly going down. Now, why would an ounce and a half sinker? Why wouldn't that just, you know, you put that on, you should drop right to the bottom. No, the line acts like a parachute. As that tide's coming in, it's grabbing the line. And the grabbing of the line is kind of like picture a sheet in the wind on a clothesline. It kind of billows up and then the ends fly out. And that's what's happening. That middle line is getting bowed with the current. It's pulling it along. And unless you have some weight on the end of that crab, the current grabs that line and just puts it right out the back of the boat, and you never get down. The more current you have, the more weight you have to have just to be able to get down to that 20, 30 feet. Otherwise, the line just grabs it and pulls it right back out the back of the boat. So...
That's actually a really pretty accurate description as far as the line drag coming through the water.
Yeah, it's all about the line acting like a parachute. So if the current's a little slower, we use no weights at all. If it's a little bit more current, we put a half-ounce sinker on, or a quarter ounce, and then a half, then an ounce and a half. And if that doesn't work and you can't get down with that, then what you're going to do is end up deep dropping. And deep dropping is putting 4 to 6 ounces of weight on, as Robert said, usually letting it slide up and down on the main line. The reason is while you're holding it, that sinker will go down and sit right above your swivel. And I would use a swivel on there. Oh, that's going to spook the fish. Are you crazy? There's a 4 to 6 ounce sinker right there, for God's sakes. If that sinker ain't scaring the fish, that little chunk of metal on the swivel is not going to scare the fish. Let's try to remain somewhat sensible here, right?
Yeah, very much
so. I mean, guys, oh, I got to tie line to line. That swivel's going to scare my fish. Are you kidding? You dropped 4 ounces of lead right there. Yeah. That obviously doesn't scare a fish. Let me see. I'll throw a swivel at some fish in the water to see how much they spook. Then I'll throw 4 ounces of lead at them. see if they stay anywhere within a mile. So here's this sinker coming down. It rests on the swivel. Now, the tricky part about this is keeping it straight up and down. Like I say, adjust your throttle so it's either coming, not going, the line does not move too quickly towards the front or the back of the boat. Stay as straight as long as possible. The other guy watches the depth finder. Now, if you let it go down, let the sinker hit the bottom and come up two turns on the handle, that's going to put you anywhere from 3 to 6 feet off the bottom. But you got 6 feet of leader trailing out there now, too.
Yeah.
That can get a little dicey on that. But usually the leader trails straight out from the sinker. So if your sinker is 6 feet off the bottom, your leader's probably still 2 to 4 feet off the bottom. But watch the depth finder, because if you're in 60 feet of water when you drop, and all of a sudden you look at the depth finder and you got 45 feet of water and your line is looking like it's trailing towards the back of the boat, well, you're snagged on the bottom. Yeah. Now, what is the most fun thing in the world to fight? The number one fight anyone will have in their life. More stories have been told, more songs have been sung about this one single hookup. The one most prevalent fight anybody will ever have in their life. And that is, guess number one, RJ?
Hook in the bottom.
Yep.
The drain plug in the bottom of Boca Grand Pass.
Yeah.
It's so rough. And I mean, the hook will snag in the bottom. The sinker will hang on something. And once you're snagged on the bottom of the Boca Grand Pass, your first time, you will fight that at least 30 minutes. I'd say average time, 40 to 45 minutes. I think a record was set one time by a guy I saw out there literally fighting for about an hour and a half. And the reason you fight the bottom out there so much is the current. Now, when you're fighting a fish, you're watching the line in the water and then the boat and the guy behind you. You're like, come on, run up. He's getting away. I'm running out of line, running out of line. And the guy puts the throttle on the boat, starts getting up. You start reeling in. You get right over the top of this fish. And you're seeing him. And okay, right over the top of it. Back off, back off. And the guy backs off on the throttle. Well, what happens is the current grabs the boat and drags the boat away from your line. In the meantime, the water's rushing by the line, creating a V-shape. And it's kind of like sitting in a train that's sitting at the train station, and then a train goes by you. You feel like you're moving.
Yeah.
You really do, right?
Absolutely.
So
and out there, it's totally deceiving because of that.
And you're seeing the water V away from the line. It looks like it's running out away from the boat. In reality is your boat's moving away from your line. And the guy runs up, and they get right over the top of it, and then they drift back. And the guy driving the boat is watching the guy in the front. He's waving him forward, waving him back. The guy's standing next to him, and everybody's looking in the water, and nobody's looking at the shoreline, you know, a quarter mile away. And they don't see that they come up to the lighthouse and go away from the lighthouse, and come up to the lighthouse and away from the lighthouse. It is literally one of the most fun experiences you've ever had. I personally fought the bottom for at least a half an hour the first time.
That was my first time, too. It was about 35 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing you're missing, too, though, is that you've got boat wakes. And
my
wind.
Youth and ability?
Well, that, too.
Okay.
But you got the boat wakes out there, and you've got the wind. So sometimes you're actually doing circles. You don't realize, you know, you're still thinking it's a fish that you're actually chasing around, but the wind has blown you stronger than what the current is one direction, or a boat wake comes by and you've got to readjust. Next thing you know, you're doing a big circle again, trying to figure out how to get in position to be as close to on top of that fish as possible. And the current going through Boca Grand Pass, 4 to 6 knots.
Yeah, that's pretty good speed. That's idle speed in most canals.
Yeah, I mean, that's cooking. And if you do that around a full moon or a new moon, right at the peak of the tide, you're talking a solid 6 to sometimes 7 knots. I mean, it's cranking.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're literally rolling whitewater trying to keep up to the current.
That's trolling
much less
speed
get
for
ahead
king
of it.
Mackerel.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's awesome. I mean, go at chasing the bottom at 6 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, we're on a banger. There goes the drag. All right. Anyway, getting back now, what's the difference between fishing tarpon in the pass and fishing them up on the hill? Because right now, the tarpon during the day, first thing in the morning, bunches of tarpon in the pass, and then they seem to split off a little bit. Some are going up on the hills, some are going out on the beaches. West wind, there's no way to tarpon fish on the beach. Right. You're just going to get crushed. So the only thing left right now is coming up on the hill. What's the difference? Is there different tackle or different techniques?
No, actually, just using a lighter sinker or no sinker at all at that point, because when you move up on the hill, they're only in 18 feet of water. So, and because
of where
that's...
I would say 10 to 18.
Yeah, and because of where that's located at, you don't... It's a much wider open area, so you don't have as strong of a current. You're kind of like right at the mouth of the pinch point between Cayo Costa and Boca Grande itself. So you're almost at that widest point of the small opening there. And that current just slows down quite a bit. So it's freelining it, going down to maybe an eighth or a quarter ounce sinker just to get that thing to go down just a little bit more. It seemed to work out fine.
Well, didn't mean to take up quite this much time on just tarpon, but there's so much fascinating stuff when you get into tarpon.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know, from starting out fishing in the pass with the sharks and the tarpon and the just everything blowing up, and I mean, and then you get them up everywhere else, and it's just such a big thing going on right now.
No, I got to say one thing, just for all the new people that are wanting to go tarpon fishing. Crabs are what the primary food is right now for them. And I had a guy call me from Tampa yesterday on my cell phone looking for crabs because he can't even find them up there.
Right.
Another gentleman called me from Pine Island. Can't find crabs down there. A lot of people don't realize, like, tarpon crabs are usually blue crabs. Buying them from a legal source is very difficult, but they also don't realize that these guys that are doing it go out at night with a flashlight
and a little dip net
and just dip net up these crabs to sell to the tackle shops. So it's not exactly a consistent, easy bait to get.
Here's the one thing. There's this crab factory up towards the middle of the state, and you probably heard about that tornado that went through up there. And literally the tornado ripped the limb off that giant oak tree, threw it right into the main flywheel of the crab-making machine. And so they won't be making small crabs for a little while. We're going to have to rely on a guy taking a little boat, like a John boat or a kayak, to some little spot in the dark with a flashlight and a little dip net, walking along these edges in the dark, and spotting a crab, picking him up, putting him in a bucket, and that's how these crabs are got, most of them. Now, it's shocking there isn't more of them. I mean, how many people, I mean, everybody would want to go out with the no-see-ums, the mosquitoes, and
the alligators,
the gators, and the sharks, and all this, in the pitch black in the middle of the night, armed with a flashlight and a dip net.
Yeah, it is kind of surprising that more people don't want to jump right on that gig.
I thought most people went out and did this. Yeah. I thought everybody was doing it. Are you kidding me? FWC was in the bait shop this last week. I said, you're here to check my crabs and my pinfish. Want to see my receipts? Got lots of them.
Yep.
He was, nope, who you buy it from? And I'm like, yep, this is who and all this. Because they're going around checking because it's becoming a big thing. I think on the 22nd there's going to be a big meeting in Fort Myers about these crabs and people who can get them, who can't, who can buy, who can sell, who can catch. This is actually going to be something. If you like fishing with tarpon crabs, you might want to go to that meeting in Fort Myers. And I'll put it up on the website where the meeting is and when. I don't think it's tonight. It's the 22nd, I think.
I don't remember.
I think it's next week because today's 17th. So if it's, but when I get back to the store, I'll check. I'll call FWC and find out. But yeah, they were in checking me, making sure my licenses were up to date. All my bait was legal. A lot of people getting tickets over it. I buy from all legal sources. And that's why people say, well, you don't have crabs. Yeah, right now.
Right.
I mean, somebody can walk through the door at any minute. But before I buy bait from somebody, I have to see all of the licenses. He has to have the saltwater products, restricted species endorsement, And there's like two other ones you have to have to do crabs, not just the RS. There's two more. Plus, there has to be a wholesale dealer's license in there and all kinds of other stuff. A lot of paperwork. You cannot just go out, get this bait, and take it and sell it. You can go out, catch it, and use it for bait with just a fishing license.
Yeah.
But once you get into selling it, a lot more stuff.
Can I use my stupid question of the day card now?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Is there a crab lure?
Yeah, and I was going to say, if I was going out there, and we charge between $2.80 and $3 a piece for crabs. It's a lot of money. It's like $36 a dozen. Mm-hmm. But I'm making like 30-40% on that. I'm not getting rich on those stupid crabs. Mm-hmm. I should be, but I'm not. But I would be looking at either the Savage or the Gulp. And I don't know. I'd be just drenching them in Procure. Or I would take the Fish Bites crabs that I would put a little crab lure on a 7-aught hook, a little one. I'd put the Fish Bites crab strip on first, and I'd put the plastic crab lure on and just douse it with Procure crab. I'd have 6 inches of the Fish Bites strip on there, a plastic crab lure, and I'd just goop that thing with the Procure crab scent.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Because between the Fish Bites and the Procure, the only thing the plastic is there for is to hold more scent.
Yeah.
I don't care. You got put a crawdad on there. That would probably even be better, that Strike King crawdad. I'll bet you that would actually work better on the tarpon than those plastic crabs would.
I don't know. Those plastic crabs are pretty good. I mean, the biggest
thing... This is on Donkey Kong. I'm going to go out there with the Strike King crawdad. You can go with that plastic crab that everybody says doesn't work.
Okay.
And let's see who catches the tarpon.
All right.
Yeah, it's on, huh? Okay. Crawdad versus crab. I think my crawdad with those big rage claw tails on there, that's going to act like a paddle tail. That's going to entice my bite.
You ready for this, RJ?
Yeah, I am. I wish I had the music.
You're going to be the referee?
Yeah, you know, from the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Oh, nice. I like that.
I get to be the ugly.
Well, we had that figured.
Yeah. You guys had already drawn lots for that one, right? All right. Well, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not which of you sure. I know which one of you is bad. I'm just trying to figure out which one's the good. All right. Getting back into it, something else. Trout. Some trout on the east side. A little bit more up the Myakka. Pine Island Sound would be my number three. Number fourth place would be Turtle Bay. Snook fishing, my number one right now in front of Bull and Turtle Bay. Or mornings on a beach if it's not 6-foot waves. Right now, the waves are so big, you can't fish along the beach. So maybe inside like Ski Alley would probably be a good place because it's going to be too rough for the snook right on the beach too. They're going to just be washing too much. I think a lot of those fish are going to cut right inside, go up in Ski Alley, right inside Gasparilla Island, Cayo Costa, places like that. Somewhere very close to a pass, but on the ICW side.
Right.
You know, because let's face it, they say, well, how far? They were a mile up the beach the other day. Well, if a fish swims at a mile an hour, it only takes him a mile to get back in the, you know, an hour to get back in the intercoastal. He goes 5 miles an hour and he's a mile up. He's literally 10 minutes out, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Spanish mackerel seems to be almost everywhere. Where you got Spanish, Robert?
They're getting some out in the 20-foot holes. They're getting even a few on the Alligator Creek Reef. But I'm getting some really good reports just on the outside of the bar on the east side, especially from Burnt Store down south into the Two Pines area. And then your most consistent numbers are from Cape Hayes out through the passes. Even though it's pretty sporty out there in that big open water with this southwest wind the way it's been, especially more south wind than anything else, they're still getting some pretty good ones. I mean, there's a lot of small guys around, but I've heard of a couple in the 20, 23-inch range.
All right, so fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Jigs, spoons. I'm good. RJ was giving me the signal for how much time we got left because we were doing a show the other night. And we didn't start it on the hour because we were recording. I had no idea where I was at, so he was trying to guide me. I got a clock now. I can see where I'm at. I got a stopwatch going. All right. Back into macro rigs.
Old school.
Old school?
Old school macro rigs.
All right. To do an old school macro rig, we're going to take a second for this. I use 40-pound test, monofilament, or fluorocarbon. I'm going to cut a piece about 4 foot long. Now, I'm going to take a Clark Ought squid spoon or a double Ought, maybe even a one, but it should be a Clark spoon. Why? Why can't it be a Johnson Sprite? They're heavy, and they're hard to troll and keep up speed. Very hard to reel and keep up speed. It's the weight that causes the problem. The Clark spoon is literally a very thin piece of stamped metal in kind of a diamond shape. But it's almost impossible to cast without extra weight. We put bullet weights on them or whatever. But to make a true mackerel rig, I'm using an Ought Clark spoon. That's a zero size. And I've got about 4 feet of line. I tie the Clark spoon to one side. I tie about a quarter inch bucktail jig to the other side. Now, quite often I use a pompano jig. I really like pompano jigs for this, but sometimes it's a regular bucktail jig. So on one side, I tied my spoon to the end of that line. On the other side, before I tie my second one on, before I tie my jig on, I take a swivel and put the leader through one eye of that swivel. And just let it go down the line so that it's just travels up and down through one eye of the swivel. I tie my other thing on the other side. So I got a jig, quarter ounce jig tied to one side. I got a Clark spoon tied to the other end. Now I take the swivel and bring it up. And what I want to do is hold it up. And so through the end of that swivel, I've got the jig on one side and the spoon on the other. Even them up. Now, we're going to pull line through the end of that swivel until you've got about a third, till the spoon is about a third of the way, and the spoon is two-thirds longer than the jig. Let's just say the jig is down half as far as the spoon is. The spoon is on the longer side. Then it comes up through the swivel, down the other side, and the jig is there. Now, the jig is on a shorter leader. So if you ever remember the old love lure things, this is basically what we're tying, a tandem rig. And I take the end of the line, pinch it, and I make a loop. It goes through that loop like three times with the line, just kind of an old square knot. Just fold it over, take the swivel on the end of that leader through three times, pull it tight, and when I hold that swivel up, I got the longer side, which is, say, about 2 feet, has that light spoon on the end. The other side where the jig is about a foot long. And now I just tie my line to that. I can cast it. I control it. And the jig hold gives you weight for casting. And the shorter line on the jig, it goes down and gives you weight to cast and bring it back in with. The lighter spoon on the end trails out the back. And very possible, and quite often you get two fish at once because it is a tandem rig.
Right. Now, you said you're using a monofilament for your leader, whereas most people would prefer steel for Spanish mackerel.
Yeah, 40-pound mono usually works pretty good.
I think it works perfectly fine. I agree with you. The biggest mistake that I see people make when going for Spanish mackerel, especially if they're casting a lure, is that they're pausing and twitching. Thing is all you have to do is reel.
For mackerel, you don't pause. You just reel.
Yeah. If you pause or try to twitch that spoon or that bucktail to get it to do its action, so you believe, that's when you get bit off. You're putting that little tiny bit of slack in the line, and that fish is going
to
whack it.
And when you go to reel again, that swivel or whatever it is pops up in the water, acts like a tiny bait, and the mackerel attack it.
Yep. Just a good, constant, steady
retreat. Do you know what I just thought of?
What's that?
What you could do.
What's that?
Put a snap swivel on the end of your line. Mm-hmm. And I've never tried this, so I don't know if it'll work or not. Get, you know, those little cheap steel leaders? We got them like 24 inches long.
Yeah,
we got the other ones 12 inches long.
Yeah.
Put a snap swivel on the end of your line. Put the swivel from the 12-inch one on the snap swivel. then put the swivel from the 24-inch one on the snap swivel. And then on the clip of the long one, put the Clark spoon. On the clip of the short one, put the jig.
Yeah, I guess you could do that, huh?
Did you understand what I meant
by
that?
I did.
Okay, because this just came out of my head. I've never tried it. Have no idea it would work. Robert's saying, well, you should use steel for the Spanish. And I thought, well, why go through tying it all up if you could buy some 24-inch leader, they're cheap little ones in the packages, and a 12-inch one, and put a snap swivel on the line, and that way the swivel end of the leader would go on the snap swivel on your line. Put the two of them on, put the longer one with a spoon on it, the shorter one with a quarter-ounce jig on it. Should be golden.
I would say that would work probably pretty well. It'd be worth trying.
Be worth trying. The only thing that may keep it from working is the weight of the leader itself.
Right. The wire itself might change the action as far as how much more productive it'll be, or just the action of the lure.
It might make the whole thing sink too much, or close together, or tangle.
Right.
But I just, all of a sudden I was thinking, and this just popped into my head. And, you know, and as I say, I get there, it only took me 34 years to think of it. You know.
Hey, good things come to those who wait.
At least you're still thinking.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well,
okay.
I mean, everyone,
right through the heart.
No. This is a compliment because a lot of people call you a professional, and a lot of professionals stop learning. You're always trying to learn. You're always getting refreshed on old things from customers or friends.
Yeah, every day I get to meet the same new people over and over again.
Yeah, that's a different problem.
Yeah, I know.
The thing is, you aren't afraid to try to change things up.
Yeah. Oh, changing things up. I'm big on that. Ask both these guys.
Oh, yes.
Good God, having to put up with me. I don't wish that anybody. A lot of shark fishing going on out there right now.
Yes.
You guys didn't catch any sharks yesterday,
Nothing.
Though.
It was pretty sporty.
You were going out for the big slam.
Yeah.
You wanted a jewfish, a shark, and a tarpon.
Yeah.
Okay. Goliath grouper, a shark, and a tarpon. I get it. Hey, if a Jewish person has time to be offended over the name of a fish.
Oh, wait, I got to chime in on this.
Okay.
Because it wasn't originally called a jewfish. It was called a jeweled fish because of the colored spots. And if you look in the old literature in Boca Grande, you know, the old newspapers and stuff, they called them jeweled groupers. And somewhere along the line, we got lazy because it was one syllable too many, right?
Oh, happens all the time.
And so we started calling them jewfish.
Jeweled.
Jeweled fish.
Yeah,
if you look
I've
in the old literature.
Kosher
that's,
fish.
Yeah, yeah.
Jewfish.
Yeah, kavilta fish. Yeah, the whole bit. But
because the meat is so, and I mean.
But thanks to our PC people in FWC and a few other places, they changed it to Goliath grouper.
Can you imagine the person with no life, no value to their existence?
Writing to FWC saying, how come?
You must change this.
Oh, God.
What kind of a pathetic life does a person like that have to have?
Obviously not a fisherman.
Obviously not a person. It's
okay, that's my one rant for today.
That was good. I'm all about that. I think if your life is so sad, that's, well, good for them. I mean, my life, I'm a little busy. I got so much stuff going on. I ain't got time to, well, heck, I don't get offended by anything. I don't care. Call me whatever you want. All right. Colors, any better colors than others for catching fish right now?
Honestly, not really.
I'm still going with pink and chartreuse. The water's still pretty clear. I'm fire tiger, pink chartreuse, nuclear chicken.
See, and the nuclear chicken slowed down a little bit. The pink is still doing a pretty good steady seller. The chartreuse is always kind of a steady seller, but that nuclear chicken has slowed way down this past 2 weeks.
Okay, give me something.
I think it's a great color.
Give me a little bit about bass fishing right now. I hear it's going crazy.
Oh, this rain, these nice steady rains and these really heavy downpours have cooled the water temperature down, got the frogs going and pretty excited. And just getting some of the bait fish and bugs getting knocked into the water from the rain, it's definitely got the bass excited because the last 2 weeks have been pretty quiet on bass. It's been okay, but the last several days, definitely some pretty good fishing going on. A lot of guys are buying shiners. A lot of guys are buying the plastic frogs.
How about lizards? Anybody doing
lizards
yet?
Lizards have been doing pretty good, too. That's the other one.
Are the bass still on the beds?
No, not at all.
And that's weird because when they're on the beds, the lizards sell like crazy. Everybody wants lizards.
Yeah. But when it gets rainy like this, some of those lizards get knocked off the trees. It gets a little cooler out, so...
Good point.
They're feeding on them. Plus, you've got the salt.
I wouldn't be rigging them with a lead on them. I would be free-lining that lizard out.
That's why
trying
like
to make it either swimming by the top or drifting down into the water rather than with a sinker trying to attack the eggs.
Right. And plus, we have a type of freshwater salamander that lives in the waters here that's kind of neat.
Okay. Well, anyway, bass fishing going crazy. Tarpon fishing going crazy. Shark fishing doing really good. Trout's okay. Snook's good. A lot of stuff to get out there and go after, boys and girls. Robert, say goodbye.
Goodbye, Robert.
Say goodbye, RJ.
Goodbye, RJ.
See, I don't know why. I'm working with the Henny Youngman of the fishing industry here. I get no respect. Fish and Frank. Go to fishandfranks.com. Check us out. Bye-bye. Fish, fish, fishing. I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line.